welcome to the Feeder Series podcast. I am your host, Jim Kimberley, and we're here for a brand new season. We've got a brand new platform that we're recording on, so apologies in advance for any technical problems. But we also have two new editors joining us, Stephen Walton and Martin Lloyd, our F2 editors. And we've got an old face you may recognise, or a voice you may recognise if you're listening to us, Daniele Spadi. And what we're going to do this year is a little bit new as well. It's an unscripted podcast that you may notice that despite their best efforts and iRacing expertise, we don't actually have any drivers with us. But we're going to be talking about the weekend that was, and what a weekend it was, with Bahrain kicking the season off after testing and all of the question marks we have. Zane Maloney has established himself that he wasn't just a test king. He is the master of this F2 car, or in Bahrain at least he is. And we go into F3, which looks like the most stacked grid we've had for a while. And those safety cars, who predicted that? That was probably the biggest shock of everything. Yeah, exactly. Not you, not anybody. Arvid Lindblad and Luke Browning have taken the wins there. And just a moment's silence for Dino Boganovic, who... Oh, I feel for him. We've got plenty to talk about, though. That's the main thing. Let's start with the F2. And just because you're the closest person on my screen, Stephen, I'm going to start with you. I'm going to pick on you. Welcome to the podcast. Welcome to Feeder Series. And
yeah,
welcome
thank
to
you.
F2 2024. What did you make of this first weekend?
Yeah, it was, I think, a great first weekend for Formula 2. I thought both races were really good. And, I think the star of the show was Zane Maloney. He was just...
You think?
Yeah, pretty undisputable for this weekend. I mean, that was just great performances in both races. He just had so much pace. He managed the tyres really well. And there was no one on his level this weekend. He was just way out in front, not challenged in either race.
I'm going to quickly interrupt you, Stephen, and pass over to Martin as well, because no one was close. But I would argue that we had a rookie called Pepe Marti who wasn't too far away. Martin, what did you think of Pepe Marti's results?
Firstly, thank you for having me on. Delighted to be here. I thought Pepe Marti was just as outstanding as Zane Maloney, to be honest. You know, it's his first weekend in the championship. His first full season as a Red Bull junior, and he's come straight and he's got a double podium. And I thought that was really fantastic from Marti. He's come over with Campos, who is with in Formula 3, and he's with Isaac Hadjar, who's another Red Bull junior. So there's some really good competition for him within the team. But he beat Hadjar in the sprint race. Of course, Hadjar was eliminated pretty early on in the feature race. But I thought Marti was just fantastic, and he was really the closest competition that Zane Maloney had to.
Danielle, I know you're an F3 editor here, but you, of course, watch the F2 because you are a Feeder Series nut. And I want to just do a quick shout out, and maybe you want to shout somebody else out, but Paul Aron, who somehow was so good he was anonymous almost in the TV coverage, ends up with a P5 on his first weekend, just making the step up.
He just appeared in P3 suddenly.
Exactly. Yeah, fantastic. How did that happen? Daniele, you have, of course, spoken to him. You have been covering him before. Is this the level of expertise you expected from the step up this year?
It is and it isn't, because I think we were... I mean, every single one of us was kind of surprised by the level of the F3 rookies from last year. And, of course, the F2 rookies this year with Pepe Marti and Paul Aron, but also, like, F3 reigning champion Gabriel Bortoleto getting two placements in the top six as well. So I think it was definitely surprising, but at the same time, really cool to see all of them getting a great result, especially in the feature race. And I think, especially talking about Aron, he was under the radar. And I think he was under the radar for like 8 of the 9 rounds in F3 last season as well. So I think it's perfectly in character. But at the same time, I was really happy to see him this quick right off the bat, because both him and Franco Colapinto last year in Abu Dhabi, they struggled quite a lot in their first ever outing with the F2 car. Of course, with the new car, it was much easier for them to adapt to it. But at the same time, I was really happy to see them as quick as basically anyone else. apart from Zayn, of course.
I don't think anyone was going to get close to Zayn. The thing with Aaron, and anybody please jump in on this, the thing with Aaron, he is no longer Mercedes-backed, but there was a Mercedes-backed driver who got all of the airtime. I don't think anybody else did qualify, from what I remember, on Thursday.
How many interviews? How many interviews were on tonight?
Yeah, I was going to say this. They keep showing that little clip on the screen all the time.
Yeah, so let me just confirm for anybody who might be listening to us rather than watching the Fantastic Racing. Andrea Kimi Antonelli was the talk of the town before the weekend, but he and Ollie Bearman had a very Bahrain Premier-esque experience, but to a new level of disappointment for both of them. Although Kimi Antonelli did end up finishing P10 somehow. I think the safety car might have helped to move that.
Yeah, He was pretty good on the restart as well after the safety car. He was fighting with Bierman and then, he got ahead of Bierman. They had that one good battle up into, I think, through sort of turn one up to turn four, and Antonelli got ahead. But then I'm not sure what happened to Bierman, but he dropped back quite a lot. So, yeah, I'm still not quite sure what happened to him. But
well, they went for the pit stops in the sprint race, and then they went for the unorthodox strategy of pitting Bearman in the after the warm-up lap, which didn't seem to pay dividends for them in the end.
No.
It was a disaster, Martin. I mean, Prema usually expects operate better than this, and even by their Bahrain standards, this was a poor performance.
I mean, if Prema have a weekend where they're not on the podium, it's rare, let alone a weekend where they just score the 1 point. And I think Antonelli and Bearman, they both showed their quality in various championships. You know, Bearman last year, but this was really a pretty horrible weekend for Prema. All I saw from Bearman today was he was fighting with Antonelli and then with drivers like Miata at the restart. And then there was a pretty colossal look up at turn 10, which may have been what paid to any chances of any points.
It was just that lockup as well, because he also had that Cordeal incident, which was
that was a strange one, but
exactly. It's kind. I think they're in the stewards' room at this moment, but it was it was very strange with both of them going into the pits and Bearman not realizing where Cordeal was all the other way around, and it was seemed almost a misunderstanding or miscommunication as much as anything else with both of them trying to go to the pits. Certainly not one that either will look back on fondly.
I want to bring up somebody who I think ended up being slightly forgotten about over the weekend, but also I think it's maybe because of the talent of the rookies that came up. And Daniele is your champion. Bortoleto ended up on pole almost accidentally, but he still had to put that tremendous lap in to get P2 and then inherit pole off mine when he got the disqualification. Your thoughts on Bortoleto's? Well, it started very well. It did okay. And then the lap one on the feature race didn't do so well, hitting Hajar, wasn't it? It was a bit rough.
No, it wasn't. But I think it's still a positive weekend for him. Especially, he just seems so at ease with the team, with the car, which is something that you don't really expect from a rookie. Of course, you expect it from a Formula 3 champion. But at the same time, he was very quick off the marks in Formula 3 as well as a rookie. So we were thinking, you know, top six, possibly top eight, he could be a factor perhaps in a sprint race with a reverse grid. And in fact, it was the complete opposite, starting on pole position today. But at the same time, I think he had a really positive weekend. The pace that he displayed, the moves that he displayed as well in the feature race were incredible, especially the one on Colapinto in the final lap. It was really ballsy of him, which was something that we did not see from Bortoleto throughout the Formula 3 season last year. So I think there's some development to him as well, especially for this year, you know, stepping up to Formula 2. This is the moment where you need to shine. And so I think he should be happy with his performance this weekend. Of course, the mistake with Hajar was pretty big, in my opinion. But at the same time, turn one, lap one, first time starting on pole position, it can happen. These are things that can happen. And I think he will be ready to bounce back in Jeddah, for sure.
I think it's also important. I was talking to Bortoleto at the press conference after he eventually got pole after Kashmaini was disqualified, but he was second at this point. And he was really emphasising to me that he was trying to keep his feet on the floor, not get too high, not get too low. And I think, although we had lots of really quick rookies, including Bortoleto this weekend, I think it's important to emphasise that, you know, like you said, it is things like lap one, turn one of the first feature race. This sort of thing can happen with rookies, and we expect a lot from them. But I think, especially for the first few weekends, maybe for some of them it won't be, you know, getting on the podium like Marty was, but maybe that will come, and it might take a little bit more time to get those top results, but we've certainly seen enough, like you say, from Bortoletto this weekend to be confident of a good season for him.
Yeah, the thing as well with Bortoletto that I think impressed me was that he didn't let that mistake on the, you know, in turn one, lap one, he didn't let that ruin his race. You know, it would have been very easy after getting a 10-second penalty to sort of give up or sort of, you know, keep driving rashly, if you like. But he kept a cool head, and in the end, the safety car sort of brought him back into it in the end. And at the very end, he was driving really great. And yeah, he got ahead of teammate Miney, and he also got that move on Colapinto right at the end as well. So overall,
and he also did that with a broken end plate as well.
Yeah,
he had a broken end plate from lap one.
Yeah, damage on the car. So yeah, I think if you take out lap one, it was a pretty good drive.
I know Fittipaldi and Hagel would like to take out lap one, but here we are. I want to bring up something that you said though, Stephen, that I found quite interesting, and I'd be interested to see what you three think about it. We had the Bortoletto Miney pass, which the commentators on the F1 TV, Chris McCarthy, who's been doing Transfer Weekly, stepped up
friend
last minute.
Show.
So the friend of the show, Chris McCarthy, and
yep.
I mean, the star of the weekend as well. I did not expect to hear his voice on the F2 broadcast. Great to hear
yeah.
you, Chris. You did a terrific job.
Lovely surprise.
But it was a lovely surprise. But the thing that I thought was interesting, they were bigging up Miney with the tyre advantage he had, and Bortoletto decided, no, I'm going to be the driver to focus on. Kramer had the same sort of thing with Antonelli and Behrmann, like you mentioned. And we had something somewhat similar with the MP Motorsports of Hauger and Colapinto as well. And it is this... Is it the rookie? I don't know if it's the rookie trying to say, no, I am also going to be here. Don't think you're going to dominate me. Or was it just the sheer fact that the race unfolded the way it did? There was just something about the teammates. I thought, hold on, guys, this is going to get dangerous. What did you guys think? Maybe, Danielle, you want to start us off?
I think it's really important, especially for rookies, to show that you are at the level of your teammate. And especially, for example, I think of Franco Colapinto. He has a teammate that has been here for at least two seasons and knows how to race in Formula 2, knows how to win in Formula 2. So I think for him, it was really important to hit the ground running. And for Bortoletto as well, he, of course, being teammates of Kush Miney, who eventually was disqualified from qualifying, but showed incredible pace. And we all thought, during the feature race with the safety car, that he could have been a factor for the podium, for example, after the safety car came out. So I think both of them really wanted to show that they were at the level of their teammate. And I think the same goes for Pepe Marti, for example, because in all reality, we have to consider the fact that Campos was really quick this weekend, and Hagel was, I think, one of the top three drivers, like pace-wise. Of course, P1 is kind of blocked by Zane, but apart from him, I think he was one of the quickest drivers of the weekend, and it would have been very interesting to see him today in the feature race, of course, if lap one hadn't happened.
Yeah, I felt really bad for Hedger, because yeah, it's Campos clearly had a lot of pace this weekend, and I'll be interested, because we saw it last year where Campos were really strong in Bahrain, and then it sort of, they never quite discovered that again in the season. And yeah, now I wonder, is that happening again? It'll be interesting to see in Saudi Arabia. But yeah, certainly the car looked in a great place, and unfortunately Hadjar, not really through any fault of his own, couldn't fight today, because he was out on turn one, lap one.
Martin, I'm going to throw this to you, just a quick one before I know you had a point as well, but just bring it up Campos there. The current team's championship standings is Roden Motorsport 38, Campos Racing 29, Invicta Racing 21. I know it's round one, but this is not the team's order I would expect to see at any point in the season, Martin. It's a different
well,
times
no.
for Formula 2.
You expect, you know, Prema 1, ART 2, or the other way around, with, you know, Roden and Invicta getting a few wins in there, and maybe some other teams if you're lucky. But I think it was a really good weekend for Formula 2 to show how competitive it can be with these new cars. I think the other thing to emphasise, and again, it's something that throughout the weekend was emphasised to me by pretty much all the drivers that I spoke to in the press conferences, whether it was Jack Crawford or Bortoletto or Zane Maloney, that this weekend in Bahrain, however good or bad it may be for particular teams and drivers, actually it's going to be very different next weekend in Jeddah, where there's not been 3 days of testing beforehand, where, you know, some of the drivers might not know the track. where it's a completely different style of track. So some car philosophies, Paul Aaron was saying, some car philosophies will work on one track, some won't work in Jeddah or Melbourne. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see if that flips next weekend, because it could be a total change. We just don't know with these new cars, and especially with Prema and ART really struggling, ART with those tyres as well. We can't forget about. I think it's going to be a really interesting weekend next weekend to see if that does change.
Yeah, I was. I think you made a really red point remembering that Jack Crawford also did pretty damn well until the pit stop, which I've expected more from the high tech team who have botched a few pit stops in their time, but absolute disaster for poor Jack Crawford.
Yeah.
He was looking really quick as well in the sprint race, Stephen.
Yeah, he was really great in the sprint race. Yeah, it was only Maloney who was quicker than him. But, you know, that sprint race was a lot of positions were decided in that through tyre management. And, you know, I think Victor Martins was one who didn't look after their tyres very well. And so he slipped down the order, whereas Crawford, you know, he drove well, looked after the tyres and came home second. So a really good start in the sprint. But yeah, because he was running well inside the points in the feature race. I can't remember where he was when he came into the pits. But yeah, it was something that's completely out of his control as a driver that's ruined his feature race, unfortunately.
It was. I'm going to go into the F3 stuff, but just final thought on me, and there's no need to react to it. I was just looking at the qualifying positions, and I just saw that from P1 to P15 is under half a second. And in fact, Villa Gomez and Colapinto had exactly the same lap time, but it's so tight. I know there's a lot made about Formula One having around a second for the entire 20 cars in Q1, which is spectacular in itself, but Formula 2 showing 19 cars, 1.03 typical deal, and Stanek and Dirksen just a little bit off. It's terrific. And that's, I think, yeah, that was it. Kushmini had a faster lap, but ended up not actually having a valid car. So we never actually noticed that stat. But wow, what a season it's lining up to be. And Daniela, why don't you take us away with Formula 3, the championship that doesn't even know a safety car exists because the quality of the grid.
It was a dream.
It wasn't a dream. I had washing that I wanted to hang out on the line. And I was thinking, right, Formula 3 starting. The laundry's going to finish in 2 minutes. I'll put it out in a safety car on lap 3. What happened?
I think it's safe to say that we have one of the best grids we've ever had for the championship, especially like being in season 6 of what's now called FIA Formula 3. I think we're in for a treat this season because the field is stacked. I mean, I think we have between 10 and 15 drivers that can potentially fight for podiums every single race weekend. It will just come down to whoever just finds the groove in qualifying, or who makes less mistakes in the race, or just who has the ability to make those moves. Like, for example, Arvid Lindblad did in a sprint race and just bolt his way up to P1, for example, which was really interesting to see. And I think it was a very good opening weekend, definitely better than last year. I think last season we had a lot of people just worrying about the tires, which was the case this year, but a lot of people and a lot of drivers learned from last season, learned from previous categories, how to save the tires and when to attack and when to defend, which was something really nice to see. And I think, of course, we're going to talk about a lot of these protagonists during this podcast, but I think we have a clear idea of who could be in the potential title fight, but at the same time, it's still wide open.
Well, the title fight right now is Luke Browning in P1, Tim Tramnitz, round of applause, in P2, and Christian Mansell. Highlight of the weekend for me, by the way, is Christian Mansell running. He texts me saying he ran from one paddock to another. He's never ran so fast to go and see Pepe Marti on the podium, his first podium. And karma works in mysterious ways because Christian Mansell then is on the podium himself and Pepe Marti's on the podium again. So, wow.
What a weekend for them.
What a weekend for the comedy duo and best friends on the grid. Terrific stuff. And then Leo Fornaroli, P4. And I know this is early championship. It doesn't really mean anything. But the top Prema driver right now, Arvid Lindblad, not Gabriele Mini, not Dino Boganovic. But of course, Dino had a Herculean fight back after essentially being in last place. Sebastian Montoya as well did a whole bunch of position. Just like you said, Daniele, a stacked grid. It is a stacked grid with full of quality. Stephen, Martin, any particular highlights for you guys this weekend as well? Why don't you start with you, Stephen?
You've caught me a little bit off the cuff. Who from F3?
Well, let me look. We've got Ivan Lindblad, Lawrence. First. Yeah, well, Martin, we've got Ivan Lindblad, Lawrence Van Hopen, Leo Fornaroli as a podium sits from Sprint Race. And top tip for everybody, if you ever join a podcast, make sure you've got Wikipedia. Well done, whoever is editing this so quickly. Luke Browning, Christian Mansell, and Tim Tramnitz make up the feature race podium.
I thought actually that one thing that comes to mind was Tramnitz was sort of like Paul Aaron in F2, I thought, this weekend, where he just quietly performed and, yeah, wasn't getting much of the TV coverage. But then you look at the results and, you know, a really solid debut weekend for him. And did you say he's second in the championship now?
He's currently sitting with 21 points. Yeah.
Really good weekend for him. Yeah. Very strong.
Martin, any takeaways from you? We don't have to stick solely with the ones with the silverware. There's 30 drivers, most of which are extremely talented.
Well, I think the main takeaway that I've got from this F3 weekend is, like you were saying, the quality of the grid. I think the person I want to talk about, or the team I want to talk about, is ART. And you've got Nikola Solov, who last year, he did struggle a little bit in that ART team, but he's been picked up by Alpine and he was fighting for the win yesterday. And Lawrence Van Hoopen, he finished 10th in Frieka last year, but he was putting up a really strong fight yesterday. And I think it's just those two drivers really sum up the competitiveness that we've got in F3 this year. There's, you know, you can't really imagine one single driver running away with it. This is when Arvid Lindblad, you know, wins the championship by 30 points. But I can't see that happening at the moment. I think it's such a strong grid. You know, when you've got people like Alex Dunn finishing in 9th, Kasper Stuko, I don't think, scored a point, correct if I'm wrong. There's so many strong drivers in Formula 3 this year. I think it's going to be a really difficult season to call, and I really wouldn't be surprised if it was 6 different podium sitters and a different pole sitter next time F3 comes to town. I think it's been a really, really good weekend for the championship.
I think you're absolutely right. Daniele, is the real reason that Antonelli skipped F3 just because the grid's too stacked and he thought, I'm going to get possibly embarrassed? Because you look at it and you're quite right. Alex Dunn finishing P9, and everyone who knows Alex Dunn, friend of the podcast, very talented. Martinus Stenshorn, also extremely talented, and then somewhat anonymous in the races as well. Just the whole 30 grid.
Now, I have to say that if Martinus Stenshorn figures out how to do a qualifying lap with an F3 car, watch out. Because he started 22nd in both races, finished 11th in the sprint race, 14th in the feature. He is, I mean, I was lucky enough to be one of the commentators for Freca for Italian TV last year. And just seeing him develop throughout the year, he is the master of lap one. He is like the second coming of Fernando Alonso or something, because he always gains places. He is tremendous off the line. I think in the few rounds he did in Firmec this year as well, he showed that. And he's very dangerous during the races. He's very good at racecraft. And his RA's teammate last season, Tim Tramnitz, is too. And I think he was definitely one of the highlights of the weekend, if not my personal MVP, because he was the only truly consistent driver together with the two Italians, Fornaroni and Mini. And I think he showed that MP is up there this season as well. And one thing off this is that a lot of teams are up there this year. It's not just Prema and Trident anymore. It's ART are back. High Tech is back in great form, of course, Luke Browning being a huge factor in it. But there are a lot of people that could potentially, as Martin said, finish on the podium in Melbourne. And, you know, the fact that we have now not a big break, but a couple of weeks before Melbourne, I think will definitely give some of these drivers the possibility to learn and to maybe perhaps go over the data from Bahrain to go to a track that a lot of the rookies have never been on, which will be definitely interesting to see.
Can I ask you as well, Daniel, before we go into the next bit? I didn't watch that much Freca last year, and therefore I didn't, maybe I'm wrong, but Santiago Ramos, I did not expect to be in the top 10 in both qualifying and the feature race, finishing with, I mean, outperforming Leo Fornaroli, the experienced teammate in Trident. Is that something that was a surprise, or is Ramos actually a name we should be looking out for this year?
It wasn't a surprise in qualifying. He is great on one lap pace. He dragged the RPM car last year to a front row in Hungary, if I remember correctly, and he just seemed on it on one lap pace. In the races, he was strong, especially in the first half of the season, then fell back a little bit, but the team overall fell back a little bit, I have to say, last year. And so I think that being in a team as Trident, he is expected to be in the top 10 now, every single race. Together with Sami Megatunif as well, I think he had a really good weekend for qualifying and like the first 5 to 10 laps of each race, and then just seemed to fall back, maybe because of tire management, maybe because of too much eagerness, for example, during the races. But I think Trident, I don't want to jinx it, but I think they are the favorites for the team's championship as of right now. Oof, they have three. Yeah, definitely jinxed it. But
you've definitely jinxed it.
I definitely did, of course. They're never going to score a point from here on in. But I have to say, they look really strong. And I want to reiterate something that I said in the F3 podcast last year at the end of the season, which was that one of the championship hopefuls this year will be Leonardo Fanaroli, because he looked really quick this time around, only seventh in the feature race, but he had a calmness and a confidence in his means that I had never seen from him. He's ready to be the team leader, and especially talking to him in the press conference after the sprint race, where he was asked, you know, why didn't you try and overtake Laurens Van Hoopen at the final part of, in the final part of the race to go for second? And he gave me an answer that really reminded me of the way that Gabriel Bortoleto just decided to go on with this F3 side of things. And it was just like, I didn't attack him because it was just 1 point more than third place. And I'm just thinking about the championship and I don't want to throw away 8 points to just gain another one, which is the perfect championship mentality, I think, with this grid and in this series, because I think consistency will definitely be key. And he's really up there. But of course, he needs to be now fighting for podiums and race wins from Melbourne as well. Definitely.
I love how mature everybody drove with that sort of mentality. I think it was echoed across the grid. And I think before we kind of wrap up on the F3 side of things, Stephen, that we've somewhat overlooked somebody called Luke Browning, who I don't exactly know how we've ended up doing that, but that was a controlled race. I thought Christian might have ended up pipping him in the end, but he just seemed to, I think the team radio said it's time to turn the screw, like they were just holding back. Has this Macau win just transformed him into a new driver that's going to be a championship favorite?
Yeah, ever since Macau, I mean, yeah, amazing. And even I thought I was probably, along with most of his team, quite worried when they were talking about the sound that you could hear from his car that was a bit unusual. But then they got that really great shot of the vibration that was going through at the rear that I think must have been causing it. But a really controlled drive from him, obviously with Dino Beginovic not getting away off the line very well. It let Browning get into the lead pretty easily. And from there, he just controlled the race. And that message from the team about turning the screw just showed you, I thought, how in control they really were. And, it seemed like everything was going to plan. And, I guess a good way for him to recover after the sprint race where he lost out massively because of that penalty, which I thought was a little bit harsh considering very fine margins. And I think it was 10-second penalty in the end, not even a 5.
I think one person had a 5-second penalty and everything else was a 10-second penalty.
I thought it was quite harsh for what looked very much just like good racing. But, that's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. And, so a good bounce back from him.
And half of the Williams team apparently going to support him as well. It's good to see James Vowles and I think it was Sven Smeets there, the sporting director. And I think they're putting a lot of stock in them. And Williams have transformed their driver academy into...
Yeah, and great performances the whole weekend, really, because O'Sullivan was probably the better of the AR2 driver, the ART drivers in F2. Victor Martin sort of not really on it this weekend, just sort of a bit out of sorts, I thought. But Sullivan had a strong debut and Franco Colapinto had a good result in the feature race, maybe a little bit quieter earlier in the weekend, but really pulled out a good drive in the feature.
I absolutely agree. Now let's just move on to, as we wrap things up, we asked you on Twitter or X or whatever the hell it's called right now, if Elon's changed it in the hours from recording to release, What did you think of the opening Formula 2 and 3 weekend? And drop your hot takes. Now, Tom Evans Media says, as usual, people are judging this weekend's results as the be-all and end-all of this season's order. Martin, we know he's right that this is not going to be the be-all and end-all. How indicative do you think any of it was for from in Formula 2 and Formula 3 for what we're going to see for the rest of 2024?
Okay, so I think Maloney is extremely strong. I think Browning is extremely strong. Outside of that, I think you can obviously look at this weekend's results and see who's putting good performances and who's capable of it. But in terms of if you're talking about championships, future race wins, I think that's the two that you can really take forward. I think, you know, for example, Pepe Marti, he had a great weekend. I was so impressed with him, as I said earlier. But you just don't know, like Stephen said, if Campos's form is transferable to Jeddah. And Pepe Marti, like I said earlier, told me the same in the press conference, saying next weekend is going to be completely different for everybody. But I think with how far ahead Maloney seemed to be, he was so in control of both Formula 2 races. He came from 8th to 1st in 8 laps and never looked like losing that yesterday. And I think similar with Brownie, actually, even though he was within the DRS window of Mansell for a large part of the race today, I think actually it never looked like Mansell was going to be in a position to pass him. Maybe a couple of times the gap was a bit smaller, but it always seemed like Browning had the edge. And I think if that's something he can maintain, I think he could be a really strong contender. But I do have to agree with that take. I think that it's really difficult to draw conclusions from this weekend, especially considering the nature of Bahrain, how it's an abrasive circuit. And I think teams like Prema, ART, and drivers in Formula 3 like Dino Baganovic, I think they'll be coming back stronger next time out.
Well said. Danielle, I'm going to put this next hot take on you from F1 Pepe, who said, Behrman better step up fast, otherwise he could have a very difficult year. Agree?
Agree and disagree. I mean, he needs to step it up, but at the same time, Bahrain wasn't his best track last year. I think he really struggles with tyre wear, especially around here. Last year, he had the exact same problem. And I think not having a good car underneath him is a problem, and I think it's more on the frustration kind of side. But I think, you know, maybe not necessarily from Jeddah, because it's next week, and I don't think that Prema can turn things around this quickly. But at the same time, when we get to the kind of European portion of the season, he will need to step it up, because otherwise this could reflect badly on him. And of course, he is one of the most, I don't want to say recognized, but at the same time, I think he is one of the most desired people in the paddock for 2025 in Formula One. So I think he needs to step it up, but I wouldn't read too much into this weekend, because in general, it was just very difficult for Prema, and they tried different things. Basically nothing worked. And so they need to wipe the slate clean and just go from next week, try and learn something new. And I think Behrman will definitely ramp up his performances from round two onwards.
Stephen, this is a hot take I want you to take from okay. Albert DW98. Marti is a future of Red Bull, no doubt.
Ooh, I think maybe a little bit early to say that outright, but certainly Marti surprised me a lot this weekend, and I thought, yeah, if he continues to do what he did this weekend, then maybe that could be true. But I don't think it's fair to judge a driver based just on one weekend. We need to see it throughout the whole season. But certainly a good, really, really good start for him. And now it's just about continuing it, I guess.
Well, let's go for one more on each of you. Martin, this one from, it's Japanese symbols, I think. So I'm not going to read that. But Safei, I think, is the username. Rookies apart from Antonelli are way too criminally underrated in F2. Marti Bortoleto, Aaron O'Sullivan, Crawford, Colapinto. These are rookies like Andrea Antonelli. And they have all had standout performances, not saying that he didn't either. Behrman was cooked. Are the rookies criminally underrated?
I wouldn't even go as far as to say they're underrated. I think we've come into this season. We know how strong the field is. Everyone's been talking about it, how we've got, you know, champions from three different series coming into F2, as well as, you know, the returning drivers, your Behrmans, your Martins, in Crawford. I think maybe some people aren't rating them as highly, but I think certainly after today, I don't think you can underrate most of those drivers mentioned, because you look at drivers such as Colapinto, who put in a really strong performance against someone who was a Formula 3 champion not that long ago, who's an F2 race winner, as Daniele said, he knows how to win races at this level, and Colapinto did really well against Hauger, I thought. And I think drivers such as Colapinto show that I don't think you can underestimate these rookies this year. They are so strong. I think maybe before this weekend, it was maybe seen as Behrmann, Martins, and maybe Antonelli who could go for this title in terms of the wider outside looking perspective. Whereas I think now you've got your returning drivers. I think Zane Maloney is the favourite now, but those rookies, I really don't think they can be slept on at all.
What a great answer. I think you're in the right job, mate. This is exactly what we need. Daniele, this one is a little bit F3 related because of the timing of it, but Mercedes, this is from Cat Met Oliver, Journal of Cat, I think is what it's meant to read. Mercedes did a big L to fire Paul out of their academy, and he deserves way, way better.
He deserves a lot. A lot of credit, first of all, because we totally forgot about him during the races. So first of all, he needs more attention, that's for sure. But I don't know, I think Mercedes is a very tough driver academy to analyze as of right now because of the whole Andrea Kimi Antonelli thing. So it is very tough for us to try and see whether or not they have the actual space to have other drivers and perhaps just put all their eggs in one basket could be a good thing. But at the same time, if Paul Aaron doesn't find a way into another driver academy, I think if he keeps these performances up, it will be impossible for him not to. So I truly believe that he should be on a driver academy, but at the same time, it isn't mandatory. You know, if you've got the pace, if you've got the skills, we saw it with Alex Albon in 2018 that you can step up even with no driver academy backing. And so I think he just needs to concentrate, put in his performances, and perhaps things will come on their own.
Well, we've seen with talent, you get nothing in this Formula 2 sport as we don't look at any of the champions making their step up. Let's have the final word with you, Stephen, which I wanted to go with. Where did I have it? This one. Uzi Woozy 420 at, not Uzi Woozy, I don't know if it is Uzi Woozy or not Uzi Woozy with that that name, but we're in for the best feeder series season for quite some time.
I'm going to definitely agree with that. I think all four races, so the 2F2 and the 2F3 races this weekend, were all stunning, all really great to watch, really entertaining, great overtaking and great storylines coming out of each one. And yeah, I think even in the F2 races, even though Zane Maloney dominated both of them, it was still exciting to watch because there was so much happening behind. And even, you know, I have to admit, in the sprint, I was half wondering if Maloney was going to, you know, drop off right at the end with the tyres. But no, he kept it right to the end. But yeah, it was great racing this whole weekend. And I just hope it continues, because if it does, I think, yeah, it'll be one of the really great feeder series seasons.
Yeah, I am absolutely hyped. What a way to start the F2 and F3 seasons, and going to kick us off nicely for the rest of the full season of feeder series racing outside of the winter now. Very, very excited. But I'm going to have to wrap it up and say that's all the time we have with Stephen, Daniele and Martin. Thank you guys for coming on for the first time, for coming back on, and you'll be on repeatedly through this year, I believe, because it's a lot of racing to get through. And thank you everybody for watching and listening. If you're watching on YouTube, please drop a like on the video, leave a comment, let's know who you thought the standout drivers were this week, and subscribe to the channel as well. It really helps us out. And if you're listening, leaving a review on the podcast platform you're listening on is greatly appreciated. Finally, check out feederseries.net for more feeder series insight, including the words from these very, very solid editors we have with the feeder series team. And follow feeder_series and FS Americas on X and feeder series net on Instagram. You can find the links to all of those, plus where to find myself and everyone else on this podcast, in the YouTube description or the show notes on the podcast stream service you're using. Until next time, we have been the Feeder Series Podcast. Goodbye.